This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, and I'm telling you.
What?
If you're in studio, you get quite the fascinating experience with our show. You really do. All right, so
we do have a Tolo in studio right now, by the way.
We do. Thank you very much, Mike. We're going to put some stuff on.
You're
so,
welcome.
Not you. We're gonna,
for joining your show today?
Yes. It's your show as well.
Oh, thanks.
It's all
thanks.
Of our shows.
Not
it's
what you
our
say
show.
After the oh my this God. Show's over.
So we'll show you some amazing. Mike donated an item. Not you, Mike. Donated an item for Peace-a-thon, and we appreciate it very much. By the way, thank you everyone who took part in that highest amount of money we've ever raised for Peace-a-thon by a lot. And now we got to step it up next year. All right. So how did LVE fall so far? And do you think he's fallen this far? So it was really interesting. I kind of use this as my gauge is, you know, we always have, you'll hear Nick Eatman, David Hellman, all kinds of folks from DallasCowboys.com on our airways. Obviously, we have Mickey every day, all of the time. Is about a month ago, the question was, I was a little surprised to see Leighton Vander Esch is third on the team in tackles since he's been seeming to have a quiet season. And Hellman said, he's flying under the radar a little bit, isn't he? I think he's been having a solid season. And then Nick said, I'd imagine the Cowboys would like to re-sign him at a good price and lock him up. So this is about a month ago that they were both like, yeah, not saying he's great or anything, but yeah, like, oh yeah, he's solid. But I feel like he's a player that a lot of the Cowboys fans have started to look at and been like, what is wrong with him?
He was horrible Thursday.
Yeah. So in the span of a month, and I know in the NFL, obviously things can change instantaneously, but in the span of a month, do you feel like people across the Metroplex, or have you guys noticed it more?
Yeah.
He looks so stiff. Like his flexibility, his ability to run, he looks like he's 35 years old trying to hang on, where you're just like, man, it's over. But he's
25.
He's in his mid-20s and looks like an old man out there, just like, I know I've lost my agility, I've lost my flexibility, I've lost my speed. But he shouldn't be that way at this age.
I think the thing that had you saying this guy is going to be going to the Pro Bowl, he might be an All-Pro every year.
Yeah.
The thing that had you saying that was, Kevin, just go back to that rookie season and how physical of a player he was.
Yeah.
And that we were surprised by that. Like, we were like, whoa, hold on. This dude had an offensive lineman wrapping him up, and he was able to shed him with one arm over on the sideline and make a one-arm tackle on a running back. Just some of the things that he was doing, you were like, he's not supposed to be able to do that. My concern, Kevin, is that the injuries and the surgeries have made him either scared of playing that physically or limit him from being able to do it. Because what you see in between the ears when you're like, hey, how did you miss your assignment here? How were you so late to this spot? That's where you're like, that's something else too. It looks like when I hear you're trying to make every play.
Yeah.
I keep hearing that resonate with me. And I understand, like, you can't do it all, but looking like you're not even trying sometimes really is difficult to watch.
Is there one that you're leaning more towards in terms of mental or physical? Because as soon as you said that, I was instantly wondering that. I was like, oh man, is it like physically he can't do the things, or is it mentally they're like, no, you can? And he's like, yeah, that's what you said last time, and then I had to have another surgery, and my career might be over. And like,
I do also wonder, like, they didn't pick up his option.
Yep.
If he gets injured again this season, that, like,
you're signing for very low.
Very low. And so I do wonder how much that is playing into some of his decisions, if he's making some business decisions, because he's like, look, I might not be a Cowboy. I don't have – Mike always uses –
Well, he's not avoiding contact. He seems to find the guards and the tackles all the time.
you need somebody in your corner to –
Need a sponsor.
Yeah, a sponsor. And I don't know who else is his sponsor across the NFL and where he could land another job where they would be like, oh, despite what we saw on tape last year –
Are the Raiders defensive coordinator, did he have him his rookie year? The old guy, Tampa 2.
Yeah, yes. I'm not sure. Okay.
Why am I drawing a blank? Limps, Marinelli? Cusses a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And then to add on to that, like, you don't know what his.
Am I describing him wrong, Kevin?
No, you're not. I was just, I was curious how many people have that sort of descriptor with you in life. Is you're like, what's that guy's name that we see at church? You know, the guy like with the eye patch, or like, what? I wanted to know, like, if that's how you're.
No clue what happened. Go ahead, Kevin.
No, we're done with that part. Back to you, Corey.
So I think that, like, not having a sponsor somewhere else, like, he has to have better tape. Like, that's something that has happened, but he can't get injured, and I think that he's protected himself there more. And I don't know how much of it has to do with that and how much of it has to do with, like, physically he's just not there.
And people have brought this up, is you go all the way back, is – from the 972, I thought LVE was the next Luke Kuechly All-Pro after his rookie year. Dude. And he did. Yeah, he was phenomenal.
I'll always remember this, Corey. We're getting ready for the 2019 season, and USA Today puts out the 10 things to watch for this year. It's something like that article. I can't remember if it was a dozen, but it was Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith are going to be the best linebacker combination in the NFL for a time to come, right? Because everybody thought, oh my gosh, Jalen Smith has come back from injury and looks pretty good. And he should keep getting better, because that injury should keep getting better, right? Yeah. He hasn't played football in 2 years. He should keep getting better. And Leighton Vander Esch as a rookie look like the real deal. And these two guys are going to be together for maybe the next 6 to 10 years as the linebacker combination for the Dallas Cowboys. And now one's out of the NFL because he can't play.
Yep.
And Leighton Vander Esch, most likely, to Corey's point, will be signed for a very small contract in the offseason by some team.
Yeah. His neck injury, wasn't that the same neck injury / surgery that Daryl Johnston had? Like, I believe here that part of that conversation was kind of they were in the same vein. And that's not an easy thing to overcome. Like, a neck injury in football?
Yeah.
That, especially at the physical position that you are. And, Mike, that might be, too, another point of you start thinking these guys that are playing very physical spots in the league – that they're going to be great for 10 years, you know, like Ray Lewis's career. Like, you can't, it's not going to be that consistent. We might be very lucky to have Micah Parsons for 5 years at the level that he's playing at. And we have to win within that window. Just the physical place that he plays, and having, you know, to have that, these kinds of big old offensive linemen, like you said, coming at him, and then running backs flying at him that are not trying to slow down. And he's got that injury with him. It's a lot to ask for him to come back and be that caliber of player.
From the I am seeing more and more who people have noticed in the last month is he's been absolutely awful for the past 3 weeks, and I think that starts to be the consensus, because, like, I didn't mean to start the conversation by any means to say, like, oh, what the hell are Hellman and Eatman talking about. I was just using that as a barometer of a month ago. Is people are like, yeah, he hasn't made, like, splash plays, but he's been fine. He's been solid. And right next to your splash play player in Micah Parsons, and now you get to the point where everyone's like, well, what are you going to do with him? Because
get rid of him.
Yeah.
Like, when the season's over, he can't play.
He's not coming back?
No. In fact, I think he might have a Jalen Smith type of career where somebody signs him to a lot of non-guaranteed money.
Okay.
And they release him, and then his career's over. He can't move.
Yeah.
If you can't run, if you can't catch people, and you don't have great anticipation, he's not a smart football player. He does not read things before it happens. He's not like Sean Lee, the way that Sean Lee could, at an older age and with less athletic ability, he cannot read things before they happen. He's a read and react guy. Like, I have to see it, and then I'll go do it. His career's coming to a close.
Do you feel like that? I mean, he's still out there playing. He's still out there starting.
We don't have, I heard G-Bag Nation on Friday
no
have
Cox.
This conversation.
Yeah. No other options.
We don't have any other options. All our guys are hurt, and so you just have to throw. Neil's struggling right now, too, and they're just like, well, we have to play him. What do you want to do? That's why Parsons has to play quite a bit of linebacker, because at this point, our defensive end situation is better than our linebacker situation.
You know what our depth chart looks like, Kevin, at that spot? You want me to throw your names?
Yeah, I'm guessing it's ugly.
Leighton Vander Esch is one of them, Kevin.
Okay.
That's your option. Behind him, Luke Gifford. You ready to start Luke Gifford this week?
Yeah.
Frank Gifford's grandson.
Keanu Neal, There, he does not, on the ESPN depth chart, he does not have a backup. Micah Parsons, Francis Bernard, and Jabril Cox. But guess what? Jabril Cox is injured.
Yep.
So, like, you have two other backup linebackers, essentially.
Yeah.
That you're kind of sitting there going, that's going to be it for me. So, like, the only option is play this season out. Hope that you can get him in the right packages that allow him to be to maximize whatever he is, but also kind of not expose him at the same time. And maybe he makes a couple of good plays for you in the playoffs. Maybe something does happen for you there. But I would say that the move on part of it is, hey, we missed on that one. He was good for a bit while he was here, but injured a lot. And let's go find us the kid from Georgia or something like that. I don't know.
Depending on which one, sure. All right, we're going to get to betting with Bassing in just a second, but I thought about the comparison here. I know this player has accomplished far, far more, but I was really fascinated to see certain sectors of the media lose their minds over the weekend when they're like, oh my God, Ben Roethlisberger has privately told people this will be his last season with the Steelers.
He publicly told the NFL with the way he's playing.
Exactly. And I heard Schefter's like, well, there's no doubt this is the biggest story in the NFL right now. I was like, it is? Somebody who's not that good at football anymore, who already restructured his deal because they were like, we don't think you're good, and we don't want to pay you money, is going to leave that team and maybe not play football anymore. That's the biggest story.
It's a huge story, Kevin. Because he's been in the league for a long football time.
And, like, I get that, but how long has it been since you were like, oh, yeah, no, he's still really awesome, and he should stick around for a while?
3-4 years now? I mean, like, he's been there, and you were always like, well, the dude sees it, you know?
Yeah.
But his arm can't do what he wants to do. His arm can't accomplish the things that he knows he can do at this point. So, like, yeah, we were watching that fall apart this entire time, and I think it's frustrating to some of his teammates, too.
And to tie this all back in to LVE, Micah Parsons currently tied for 8th in the betting odds for Defensive Player of the Year. One of the players he's tied with, that would be amazing. Then I was like, we really did a terrible job on this segment. Derwin James.
Oh, we couldn't get him though, dude. That's not one of those we passed on him.
He was picked 17th and late 19th, right? Is that the way it ended
I thought
up?
It was back to back, but you might. But okay, either way, it was a pick or two apart. Right. And when he started falling, I remember us running around the pluckers, like demanding happen.
Really,
like, that
good
guy
player
sitting at that table is going to be like, okay, I'll make
it. I was
call.
Watching Taylor Hearn pitch against Seattle at the pluckers that I was at. I remember it was his first ever start. I can remember, and he didn't throw well, and then got hurt, and then didn't pitch the rest of the year. And now he's doing great. But I just also remember the draft and Taylor Hearn making his debut.
I do wonder if, because we're all fans of Jabril Cox, but Dan Quinn looked like he was still hoping that he could learn this season. Hey, let's get him in on a couple different packages, and again, not expose him too much. Let's get him in on goal line. Let's get him in on third downs. And he was making some plays. I do wonder if, like, if he'll be ready next year. You know, if, like, it's okay, now it's the YouTube guys. Y'all are the show. Get ready for that. And if the Cowboys just need depth at that spot, or if they need to go ahead and draft some more.
All right. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. And we got to get some updates going. Mike, how did we do betting this week?
Well, Kevin, you won your game. You picked Detroit plus 7.5. They won that game.
Good job.
But then I picked the Miami Dolphins. They were minus 6, and they covered that against the Giants. It wasn't an easy cover because at halftime, the Giants looked like they had a chance throughout the game, not to win the game, but to cover the spread. Corey?
Yes.
You picked Arizona minus 7.5. That was a pretty easy cover for you as they were winning that game by quite a bit. And I picked the L.A. Rams minus 13, and they covered that one pretty darn easy. So we actually went 4-0 with our picks. Unfortunately,
so replay
that didn't
the down
matter.
Is what we're doing. There's a penalty on either side. Replay the down.
We just wasted our time.
It doesn't matter because I then tried to get my total for Gavin Dawson down to 0 as I took.
Oh.
The Georgia Bulldogs minus 6.5 for $110, and that one didn't end up so well. So now I'm back down $220 to Gavin Dawson.
You also lost $20 to Jeff on that same bet.
Shut up.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
He does have New England at plus 2.5 tonight.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that Buffalo covers the 2. It's actually up to 3 now, but he betted at 2.5. So as long as Buffalo wins by three, I get my $20 back from that bad Alabama game.
Think Buffalo wins this game?
I was about to ask you because you've been advocating for the Patriots pretty well.
I think the Patriots are undefeated on the road this year.
Oh,
and like much like Arizona, and yeah. I just think that maybe that young team, it benefits them whenever Belichick's able to kind of corral them and say, "All right, y'all, follow me to this place." I think that they're benefiting from being on the road. So this is an interesting one tonight for sure.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Usually we talk about college football on a Tuesday, but given the circumstances, it's college football on a Monday. The college football playoff is set after Georgia craps the bed, as Mike would say, and Michigan dominates. We'll do all that next right here on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, asking the questions that matter, like who is the most famous person from Duncanville?
Are you the most famous person from your high school, Kevin?
I think Tamika Catchings is probably the most famous.
That makes a lot of sense.
Like, who went to North Garland High School?
Ooh.
Name a person aside from you.
I was going to say I could like name my old friends. shout out to Scott Baker. What's up, buddy?
Whoa, wait, dude, you said old friends? Are they not your friends anymore?
Oh,
they're
man.
Just old now.
Barry Foster and Ray Crockett are former NFL players from Duncanville.
So you might not be.
Yeah, Greg Ostertag.
Yeah.
I've heard about his fame.
Todd Ritchie, first round pick.
Well aware.
David Need was the first overall pick for the Rockies organization.
Draft, right?
Yeah. So yeah.
Mike's always said it is the city of champions.
I think we have 10 former major leaguers, which I bet there's not many high schools in the country for the history of their school, especially let's say a public school that has 10 former major leaguers.
Yeah, that I mean
Highland Park, like they have two guys there, both better reason. Than us. Clayton Kershaw is one of the greatest left-handed pitchers of all time, and Chris Young, who very good player and now general manager of the Rangers, they're more popular than the 10 Duncanville guys, but they have two former major leaguers.
I'm looking at a list right now the high schools that have put out the most major leaguers.
Okay.
And it's going to take me a minute to scroll.
Okay.
Through this,
so. All right.
This will be a segment for tomorrow.
Okay. We will get back to that. Now, it's time for college football on a Monday. Clearly, we could not ignore. I know usually we talk about college football on Tuesday, but college football playoff rankings are out. I feel like the only real surprise was 1 versus 2. Like, did you think Alabama was for sure going to be number one after their dismantling of Georgia?
Yes.
Or did you think that Michigan, which also smacked around an opponent and has been on freaking fire, would get up to number one?
I think if you win the SEC, you're going to be number one in the country, pretty much. Your schedule's just too tough.
Especially without another, like, a Power 5 undefeated. Like, we'll get to Cincinnati, so...
Are you mad A&M's not in the Final Four since they were the one team to beat Alabama?
I am definitely not
mad.
We got
screwed over again.
A&M showed that they did not deserve anywhere close to that with some of their performances this year. But
I think also, like, there was probably a will to avoid an immediate rematch of the SEC championship game in the semis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I could see that, and that's why I was curious if they would dare move, like, Cincinnati up or anything like that. But, hey, we got the prediction from Stephen Jones earlier. He thinks they'll see each other again. So
he does.
Alabama at 1, Michigan at 2, Georgia at 3, and Cincinnati at 4. And just to show you the power of the SEC is Georgia has been installed as a 7-point favorite, I believe, over Michigan, despite Michigan being higher in the rankings, and Alabama is a 13.5-point favorite over Cincinnati.
I'm just mad at Georgia because they lost me so much money.
Yeah, sorry about that, Mike. They gave up, what, like half as many points in that one game that they had all season?
I thought I was totally wrong. I thought Alabama would score a max of 20 points in that game. And so I was looking at it going, if Georgia can score 27, they'll easily cover the spread. It is so weird you lick your fingers that much.
Sorry, Mike.
Yeah, I think one thing with Alabama is like their offensive line came to play in a way that we actually hadn't seen that offensive line stand up in that way all year. Plus, I mean, Georgia's defensive line, big boys. They're built to stop the run. They're not built to stop a team that's going to drop back and pass the whole game, which is what Alabama did.
And if you weren't already sure, Bryce Young is going to win the Heisman Trophy. Like, it yep. looked like he was probably going to win the Heisman Trophy when you show out at this particular level against a defense that had been stuffing folks all season long. Just think about it. They scored 41 points against Georgia's defense. Georgia had not given up more than 17 points in any game.
Wow.
And
yeah.
Alabama put 41 on them.
Yeah, that's the impressive part, that their offense did what it did, and then kind of stands out as this, like, okay, so what is this Bama? Is this the Bama team that you thought it was?
Well, here's the issue. Now they just lost one of their motivational tactics because Nick Saban said
he can't go on a rant.
Well, he's like, find a way. Sucks. Yeah. He said that being underdogs fueled the team. And then Kirby Smart said that the loss is going to be a wake-up call for his team.
At the end of this season, it doesn't matter what they were ranked when they played if you look at it now. I get, like, if you look at Georgia's schedule, it was a very tough schedule when you look at who they played at the time.
Yes.
But Clemson ends up being 19 in the country, Arkansas 21 in the country, Kentucky 22 in the country. Those were their three toughest games of the season. Does that make sense?
Not Auburn. I don't know where
Auburn is not ranked.
Okay.
Texas A&M is ranked 25. If I'm looking at your college football playoff rankings.
Auburn ended in a tailspin.
Right. So I'm looking at their three toughest games, Clemson, Arkansas, and Kentucky, if I have this right. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry I'm wrong. I'm just looking at the rest of their schedule according to now the college football rankings, and they didn't play a team. The highest ranked team they played was their opening game against Clemson at 19. So I'm just wondering, look, I'm down on Georgia. Obviously they lost me a lot of money. I'm just wondering, maybe they didn't have as tough a schedule because they're in the weaker part of the SEC.
For absolutely for sure. Now, we mentioned Michigan. Is Michigan destroyed Iowa? Do we have audio for that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's hear it.
McNamara gets the snap, looks, throws it backward pass, and now Donovan Edwards throwing deep down the sideline. He's got a receiver wide open. The trick play, it's a house call for Michigan. Touchdown on the Transcontinental. And the Wolverines with
Roman Wilson, I believe.
Donovan Edwards to Roman Wilson. They go 75 and make it a 13-0 lead.
So they would go on to win 42-3. Jim Harbaugh said that he is going to donate all of his $1 million bonus for winning the Big Ten to athletic department employees who got pay cuts due to COVID.
Nice. That's awesome.
That is like seriously amazing.
Now work to get him a raise next year.
Okay.
Doesn't he make a lot of money?
Or? Yeah, he does. No, not him. Like them. Get them raises next year.
Okay,
he can get that money back.
Now, who took the loss the hardest? It was not actually Iowa. It was Dan Wolkin, the reporter, who tweeted out, "It is absolute insanity that people talk seriously about Michigan firing Harbaugh a year ago." So he's a columnist for the USA Today, and people were pretty quick to point out.
Relative of Christopher Wolkin, right?
They spell their last names differently.
Right? You know.
People, you literally wrote this yourself last year. So, remember, Wolkin said it's insanity. He doesn't know nosebleed seats. That it's insanity that somebody would want to fire Jim Harbaugh. And this is what he wrote last year. At some point, Michigan will either have to make another expensive and long-term commitment to Jim Harbaugh or cut bait and admit that he simply can't get the job done and that job done where that once seemed inevitable. That is starting to become clear. The Harbaugh era is doomed to mediocrity, frustration, and unfulfilled promise, and both sides need to figure out how to engineer a graceful exit. So the
he must have been quoting somebody.
No, this was in his column. The people was him, and people never forget.
It'll be like me if Mark Cuban turns the Mavericks around. I'll admit I was wrong today
on that.
You
call yourself a dumbass.
Yeah. Ugh. I've been a dumbass multiple times in my life.
Facts.
No doubt
about
it.
Like three.
Mm. But I feel like I'm going to be right about Mark Cuban, that he cannot run a basketball organization successfully now. But I hope I'm wrong because I want them to be good.
This is like this year has been a huge year for Jim Harbaugh because Jim Harbaugh came in being like somewhat of the quarterback whisperer, and we ain't seen that. The closest they had gotten to this year was like Shea Patterson.
Yeah.
Which, good luck with that.
Good for a minute.
They also brought him in to be the guy to win against their rivals, win those big games against the rivals, and at the very least with Ohio State, that hadn't happened until this season. So this season has done a whole bunch of good for him in those regards.
Kevin, in that quote, though, that he wrote on that mm-hmm. passage there, mm-hmm. he did say either or. Like, I know he added the more doom and gloom on there on the or part, yeah. but he did say either this happens or this happens. So it's not like he just said it's only one way.
He just said they need to live with it and be frustrated with mediocrity forever.
Right. Okay. Or things are going
to
work out.
Okay. Well, I think that's a great way to write a column. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could be great or not. Who knows? All right. Let's go from that to big weekend for the Big 12. No doubt the most exciting ending to any game that we saw on Championship Saturday.
Here's the play. Fourth down and goal from the one. Handoff, running left, trying to get to the corner. He didn't get there. He stopped short of the goal line. Bears hold the Cowboys out of the end zone. Baylor's going to take over. They hold the Cowboys on fourth and goal from the 1 yard line, and Baylor will take over with 24 seconds to play.
That's from Baylor Radio, by the way.
Yes, that would be really weird if that was fired up level for Oklahoma State. Baylor beats Oklahoma State 21-16.
Do you feel better if you're an Oklahoma State fan that it didn't matter?
You weren't getting in it either way.
Right. Now, if Alabama would have lost, they would have got in.
Yes.
But they didn't know that at the time. So it was like, oh, no, we just lost our chance. But then once Alabama won, it wouldn't have mattered if you would have got in.
I don't know how many Oklahoma State fans view it that way, but you're definitely right. And I saw Choppy was one of the people, but multiple people brought this up. Oklahoma State had 2 drives and 7 plays inside the 5-yard line in the last 8 minutes, and they scored 3 points.
That's right. That's right.
That play specifically right there, if he just puts his foot in the ground and turns upfield instead of trying to beat the guy to the corner, do you think he makes it in?
I kind
of
do.
I do too. Like he was trying, he wasn't fast enough to get to that corner before that guy, but I think that if he used his leverage. Now maybe he didn't have the ability to do it, but like you were there and you tried to beat a guy that you tried to outrun a guy that you couldn't outrun. And that was sad.
Well, I don't even think he needed to outrun him. Like, this is the thing about being a running back, is that it's all about do all this work to establish your core. And he went and gave up that core and that leg strength by getting into the air. Keep your feet on the ground and drive through that cat. Yeah. And all you needed was a half a yard. You might be able to lean forward, my guy.
Now, Reggie,
you ever been to that spot though, where you're running and then your legs kind of run out from under you, and maybe that's what was going on?
No, I'm an athlete.
I know, Reggie. Oh my God, never lost.
Reggie, what was your most exciting conference championship outcome of the weekend?
Oh man, I set myself up for this, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
All right, Cincinnati Bearcats handled business.
Oh, Ritter will hand it off. Jerome Ford bouncing it to the left. There he goes to the 30, pulling away like Secretariat at the Belmont. Touchdown, Bearcats! As Jerome Ford takes it to the house to give Cincinnati a 3-score lead.
Now that's an objectively amazing call. I
saw where that horse died.
Yeah, Medina Spirit died a sudden heart attack or something right after its 5th furlong today.
Oh no! Yeah. So
back to you, Kevin.
I actually thought Reggie was going to say meet me and bring up that UTSA defeated Western Kentucky for their first ever Conference USA championship.
UNT already ruined it.
Yeah, because then he'd be here stunting for them to be in the playoff, and they're like, the hell with Alabama, get UTSA in there. And
I thought he'd be talking about the punter that he was so
Matt
in love
Areza,
with over the weekend.
Gosh, San Diego State. I feel like Brady Hoke is a war criminal. Like,
oh,
I mean,
my Lord.
Matt Areza had a couple of beautiful opportunities to get off some great punts. If you don't know, Matt Areza is like a all-star weapon of a punter. I'm talking about 70, 80 net yard punts. And he had two punts blocked. in the conference championship.
Kevin's like, I don't want punting in my football.
But he's so good that, like, we're talking about draft
picks. Punt the ball 70 yards, and I'm interested.
Yeah.
You're going to have to wake up early on December 31st.
Yeah, because we're playing in the Kentucky in the...
You're playing Wake Forest.
I'm sorry.
Wow, man, pay attention.
What
man.
An Aggie fan.
You don't want to fly to Jacksonville with me?
Oh, the Gator Bowl. Is it the Gator Bowl?
Is it the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl?
Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. Fantastic. Some crappy bowl, yeah.
Why haven't we instituted the Scrubbing Bubbles Toilet Bowl yet?
That is a great question. By the way, did you see Quinn Ewers get ready? He has already informed Ohio State that he is going into the transfer portal. And I know Mike was on the message boards yesterday.
He was.
Seeing that he was supposedly in Lubbock yesterday.
Wreck him.
And that Texas Tech,
Coach
Texas.
Coach McGuire, that's right.
Texas A&M are all in the mix.
Dude. I bet he doesn't choose Texas Tech.
If Coach McGuire could pull a Quinn Ewers.
We give him a raise now. Would that be I don't care if he hasn't.
If you got the number one quarterback from supposedly this class, right? Yeah. I mean, he should be playing Duncanville. Yeah. On Saturday, but he's not. That if all of a sudden you get him to go to Texas Tech for 3 to 4 years, that would be freaking amazing.
Does that show he's kind of overrated if they still got to the state semifinals even without him? South Lake Carroll.
Maybe. Their running back is super awesome. I don't know the kid's name, but I believe he was a sophomore last year and was running all over Duncanville.
And then, Corey, I know you're pumped. You got your selection at Oklahoma. New coach.
Yeah, Brent Venables. He was the co-defensive coordinator during the championship season. He's awesome, man. I really like him a lot. He's been with Clemson, rocking along there. I wanted him to replace Mike Nolan as the Cowboys defensive coordinator before they found Dan Quinn. I was like, oh, okay, that's fine, too.
Can we stick with Dan Quinn?
I'm fine with that. Yeah, you know what? Now I get the best of both with my Cowboys and the Sooners.
God, I wish I was more of a college football fan. I could care less about all of these bowl games except for the December 31st semifinal games. Like, I don't care at all.
You're telling me you don't want to watch Kansas State, Louisiana State in the Texas Bowl?
Why are they playing that game January 4th? Like, nobody cares. Like, everything's been over for 3 days.
That's been a thing for several years now where they've had, like, that January 6th and 7th bowl.
And it's on a Tuesday.
Yeah, what are we trying to
pull here? Kids are back in school at that point.
Unless you go to
Baylor
college.
Versus Ole Miss, the Sugar
how we
Bowl.
Have to make the decision?
I don't care.
Are the kids in school or not?
Rose Bowl, Utah versus Ohio State, could care less. Iowa versus Kentucky in the Citrus Bowl, who cares? Yeah,
we can pick this up with G-Bag.
Oklahoma State versus Notre Dame, whatever.
We will talk with G-Bag Nation and Mike might continue to read bowls with disdain next right here on The Fan. K&C Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan right now. It's time for a chit-chat with those fellas from the G-Bag Nation. Gentlemen, how is you today?
Terrific, Heggy. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Now, I wanted to get right into something because Mike said it earlier on the show, and I was looking at some of Jeff's tweets over the weekend.
Oh, don't do that. I drink on the weekend.
Oh, well, then you might agree. Mike says that DeMarcus Lawrence has little left.
Oh, disagree.
Wait. Oh, like in his career.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he has like about 3 years maybe left in his career, and then it's over. Okay. Not that he has a little left like tomorrow.
Okay, I thought you were saying like he didn't play well or something. I'm like, man,
here's
he
my
helped
theory. I didn't know where Kevin was going. I hate that he, you know, did this, but let's keep going.
No, okay, I'm interested in you now saying you think he has 3 years. I did not feel as though that's what you were
saying.
Not 3 good
years, 3 years left in the NFL. In his whole career left in the NFL.
How many more good years?
Maybe one more, but I think he's going to deal with injuries, and you're not going to be able to count on him to play more than 12 games a year. I think that Micah Parsons is going to somewhat stay at this hybrid linebacker defensive end position. But Randy Gregory's almost 30. DeMarcus Lawrence's career is coming to a close. And then when that happens, they're going to go, well, we don't have any defensive ends that we like. And I don't think in the draft, usually in the 20s, you find good defensive ends.
It's Watt.
It's hard to do. It's hard to do.
He's still not that good. He doesn't put his hand on the ground.
Right. Neither does Micah, which is why he might win defensive
player of the year, but I still just don't think you want guys like that. Like
correct.
TJ Watt.
Not a good fit.
Yeah, not a good fit.
Have a guy that's 5-10 pounds heavier.
I think that Micah is going to move the defensive end when it looks more necessary for him to do it, which I think will be in a year or two. So next year he'll still be the hybrid guy that you're using. Then the year after that, I think he'll move more to defensive end. I bet he's going to be able to, as he gets a little bit older, put on another 5 to 15 pounds of good weight. and then move more to defensive end when the Cowboys are like, we don't have DeMarcus Lawrence anymore. We don't have Randy Gregory anymore. These guys are in their 30s if they are. And so that's where I was going with that.
Okay.
I think I agree with that. And it might be this. It might be after this year. Because I think when you start talking about salary cap things and what they're going to do, I think as a show, we wouldn't be stunned if Tank Lawrence isn't a Cowboy next year. And so that may be the opportunity where Gregory plays or where Parsons plays a whole bunch of snaps on the edge. But, yeah, Gregory, you have to re-sign if you want him. Tank, I think, will be a candidate to save some money. So it might be next year. But I also kind of like what Parsons says about it, where Mike is like, why would you want to define it? Like, why can't I just be me?
Just be a disruptor.
Like, yeah, whatever you want that week, I can do it. I'm different. Well, and I think he is.
How much of that has, like, is Dan Quinn here next year?
That's what I was, I wrote that down. I said, if Dan Quinn's not here, then the other two names I wrote underneath it were George Edwards and Joe Witt.
And George Edwards might be going to Duke.
He's going to Duke.
Is he talking about the Duke chalk?
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. He's become a favorite there.
Wow. I missed that one. I'm sorry about that.
Get it together, Brian.
I got the Oklahoma
Brian,
one right.
Out loud.
I did get the Oklahoma one right, didn't
I? That's true. Yeah.
I did.
Well, if you're an Oklahoma fan, you're welcome. Miami.
Yeah, yes. We got that one
My
right.
My uncle went and got him.
I did not see the George Edwards one. So, okay. But, okay, then Joe Witt, then. I think a lot has to do that maybe if somebody comes in and is different and they're like, well, I don't really see Micah doing this. You know, I see him doing this. That's the vision. I think Dan Quinn and these coaches – had the vision for the player. I wonder if somebody else coming in from the outside would have the same vision. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you can't watch the film and say, wow, we need to use this guy in a lot of different ways. But I think the better possibility of him getting out more opportunities off the edge were if Joe Witt were to be the would be the guy.
Yeah, we were kicking this around in the other segment, maybe two segments ago, about the most famous person from Duncanville, and Corey found this article about the high schools that have produced the most major league players.
The basketball coach?
There are two in the Dominican Republic, Mike.
Tamika Catchings, I believe, is our most famous. I mean, she's arguably the greatest women's basketball player of all time.
Yeah.
Now, we have 10, I believe we have 10 major leaguers.
Not good enough to make the top 25, believe it or not. Corey's right, the top two, 59 and 37, both from the Dominican Republic. The third one is from Los Angeles.
Is that like the major D? What sport is this? What sport are we doing?
Baseball. Baseball. Oh. The most baseball players from one high school that played Major League Baseball.
Yeah, one of the ones where they just recruit them and pay them, and it's like an academy and not a school.
Yeah.
Is there some school down in Miami?
Polytech was one of them.
I think Alex Rodriguez's school might have produced quite a bit.
I think the one, and I know there was only 14 on that list, but Ken Griffey Jr.'s high school had Griffey, I think Larkin, and then the Bells. Like Derek Bell, Buddy Bell, and Mike Bell all went there. Okay. It was kind of a weird, like,
wow.
That.
So like, not all
Cincinnati?
I played those guys in a national tournament, not those particular players, but the summer league that I was on back in the old days, if people know this, the Dallas Mustangs just had one team. It's now they have like 40 teams. So you might see a lot of kids with Dallas Mustangs hats on. Back then, if you saw a kid like in the 80s or 90s with a Mustangs hat, you're like, oh, that's one of the top 20 players in the Metroplex, probably a top 100 player in the country. And we would play that team in the Connie Mack World Series, and they were called the Midland. I want to say they were the Indians.
This was Archbishop Moeller High School, and Deal is from there as well. So
would have one of the best summer league teams, along with like the Dallas Mustangs, and there's a team out of Georgia. I forget what city it was kind of produced out of from. But when I was on this Dallas Mustang team, we had John Patterson on the team, who's from Orange, Texas. He would just live here during the summer. I mean, you'd also have a couple, like whoever was kind of within a 5 to 7 hour area, they'd have a few kids just live here during the summertime to play on the Mustangs and travel around the country and play all the premium games.
Fascinating.
We saw that at like Prestonwood Christian, right? Their high school pretty much had a bunch of kids that would do that, right?
Right now, Duncanville's number one in the country in basketball. They don't play another game in the state of Texas till December 27th.
Dang.
I'm going tomorrow. How about this for basketball, which is, I don't want to say sad, but the number one team in the country right now in high school basketball is Duncanville. The number two team in the country in high school basketball is Richardson.
Because Richardson smashed the previous number one
team. So the two top teams in the country in high school are in Dallas. And yet when
are we
you
recruiting?
Look at,
how do we get Richardson to be one of the two best teams in the country.
They got one kid who's going to Kentucky. Their kid's going to Alabama. They have 2 5-star guys.
Bennett's little private school's got 2 kids going to Vanderbilt.
Yeah. And yet, UT, A&M,
basketball,
TCU, whoever it is, right? I mean, basketball, honestly, the Big 12 is a better basketball conference than it is football conference now. But you would just think with all of these kids in the state of Texas who are dominating the high school ranks, that you would start seeing the way that you see, I'll just say baseball, for example, Texas Tech, TCU, UT. A lot of these teams are making the World Series, Dallas Baptist always making the tournament of 64. And yet for basketball, All of these premium kids that are here, yet you still don't have what you'd consider really a premium product of college basketball teams.
Well,
yeah, I think it's Dallas Skyline used to be pretty good back in the day when I was there.
I think it's kind of like what rules the sports culture of the fans and the business community, you know, and here it's football. So a lot of the focus, a lot of the resources, you know, that can convince kids, I think, go to football here, where, you know, a Kansas or Carolina, Tobacco Road. I mean, there, the huge alumni that, you know, are interested in sports that went to those universities care about basketball more. And I think it does a lot to create, you know, culture and opportunities for kids. Now with the name, image, likeness stuff, you know, all the pipeline to cash of the companies that those guys own. So we need billionaires that love college basketball, you know, to graduate from these schools and, you know, provide those kind of opportunities.
Can we get some of those billionaires?
It is awesome, though.
Invest in high school sports, too.
What do you think Baylor and Tech are doing?
Baylor won the national championship. Tech was just in it. So I guess it is paying off somewhat.
It is paying off. Yeah, it could be a lot bigger.
I'm going
tomorrow
to Richardson to watch that team play versus Coppell. I've been told by multiple people. I've seen Duncanville play. They got 5. They're 12 deep. They have 12 D1 players on their team.
Jeez.
And they have 5 kids that are 6'6 to 6'10. 2 of them don't even start. They just have to come off the bench as division.
You can see some high end high school basketball.
Can you take Cuban over with you there to that?
Wow. He'd have no clue what he's watching.
Whoa! There he goes.
That guy. Wow. I'm going to tell you something, and I don't care. I hope Mark Cuban's listening. And take this as just open your eyes. You are horrible at this, and you have struggled since the championship to figure out who's good at basketball and who's bad at basketball, and you've destroyed this franchise to just be on a treadmill of anywhere from the 5 seed to the 10 seed. You're never getting out of the first round unless you get to play a team that has major injuries come playoff time. Like, oh my God, we drew the team that the dude just got hurt. Their best player just got hurt, and their third best player might not play in the playoffs. Besides that, He has no clue what he's doing talent-wise. And it's driving me insane, as that's my favorite team, that he has no clue what he's doing, and he's just ruining everything.
What do you guys got coming up on the program?
Pure Gold, as always, Heggy, thanks so much for asking. We'll take a look at all the top stories right out of the gates. G-Bag of the Day, 2:30.
All right, roll home with the G-Bag Nation. We have been the KNC Masterpiece. Make your way back with us tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on 105 Through the Fan.
Say goodnight, Kevin.
Goodnight, Kevin.
Say goodnight, Kevin.